They thought power made them untouchable, CEOs, senators, billionaires with God complexes. But I made them crawl, cry, confess, and then I captured it all on tape. They called me cruel. They called me dangerous. They called me queen. But behind the throne, there were cracks. Behind the leash, a woman lonely, tired, raw. And then he showed up, not to kneel, but to see me. This isn't just about domination. It's about destruction, surrender, and what happens when the one who controls everything finally loses control. This is Fuck Like a Queen. Welcome to the Skillful Art of Manipulation podcast. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you Fuck Like a Queen. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Caller Doesn't Lie. They always think they're the exception. No matter how many come before them, judges, generals, billionaires with bank accounts so deep they could buy silence in bulk, they walk through that door thinking they'll be the one to break me, the one to tame the queen. They dress it up in different fantasies. Some come in cocky, some come in cautious, but the hunger behind their eyes is always the same. That sick little craving for surrender, for punishment, for someone to finally say no to them, and mean it. But I don't just say no. I say kneel. I say beg. I say lick the dirt you walk on and call it dinner, motherfucker. And they do. Every single time. My throne room, my dungeon, ain't some backroom fantasy space filled with cheap plastic toys and bad lighting. This is a cathedral built for sin. Black marble floors polished, so well they reflect shame. Deep crimson velvet curtains that bleed into the walls like a bruise. Chains hang from the ceiling like ornaments from a cursed Christmas tree. There's a cross, St. Andrew's to be exact, in the back, its wooden beams stained from more than just sweat. My toys are displayed like relics in a museum. Leather, metal, rubber, silicone, each one with a history, each one baptized in screams. And in the middle of it all, the throne. Black velvet, carved obsidian arms, spiked chrome trim. A piece of art. A warning. I sit in it like I was born in it, legs wide, posture regal, gaze that slices through souls. My heels rest on a plush cushion one of my past pets used to kneel on before he got too mouthy. Now he's a file on my drive and a shattered career in a headline. Tonight, it's Senator Matthew Crawford's turn. Oh yes, that Crawford. Mr. Family Values himself. Mr. Porn is destroying our children. Mr., we must protect the sacred institution of marriage. He's on every damn talk show preaching about decency while balls deep in escorts who sign NDAs thicker than his morals. But none of them are me. Crawford walks in wearing a $5,000 suit that hugs his bloated frame like a lie he's told too many times. His wedding band still sits on his finger, glinting in the low light like a joke. I don't ask him to take it off. I want it there. It adds to the humiliation. His breath stinks of scotch and secrets. Close the door behind you, I say without looking up. The command is soft, but it slices through the air like a whip. He jumps, fumbles, obeys. Good. Take off the suit. Slowly. He starts with the jacket. Folds it. Hangs it neatly on the rack like this is some hotel closet. The tie next, trembling fingers loosening the knot. He's nervous. Good. If he wasn't, I'd be disappointed. Shirt too. And shoes. And socks. All of it. He's bare within minutes. Standing in nothing but shame and boxers that barely contain his flaccid self-esteem. The scar across his stomach tells me he's had surgery. The tan line on his ring finger says he's only sometimes loyal. But the way his eyes avoid mine, that tells me everything. I rise from the throne. He's already shrinking. In front of me, Senator Matthew Crawford, the same man who tried to push anti-LGBTQ legislation last year, stands twitching like a fucking puppy who pissed on the carpet. I slap his face, not hard, just enough to wake something up in him. He gasps. On your knees. His legs crumble like wet paper. I walk behind him, grab the collar, blood-red leather with silver studs, and wrap it around his neck like a noose made of truth. It clicks shut with a satisfying snap. There. Now you look like what you are. He tries to speak. I slap him again, this time harder. You don't talk unless I say. Not if you understand. He nods. His face burns. I pace in slow circles, boots echoing like a metronome of fear. You know what this is, don't you, Senator? This isn't just playtime. This is justice. You're here because the world lets men like you get away with everything. Because apologies are cheaper than consequences. Because power makes people forget they're accountable. He's crying now, a soft, pitiful sob. I smirk. Tell me, how much did you pay that intern you got pregnant last year to disappear? 10 grand? 20? Or was it just enough for an abortion and a bus ticket? His sob turns into a moan. He doesn't even know why anymore. I grab the leash and yank it forward, dragging him like a dog across the floor until his face is inches from my stiletto heel. I press it against his lips. Kiss it. He does. Again. Harder. I should spit in your mouth, I whisper. You're filth. You know that, right? Yes, mistress. Say it. I'm filth. Louder. I'm fucking filth. Good boy. The session goes deep. I tie him to the cross. I flog his back until it turns the color of betrayal. I read his wife's wedding vows out loud while I make him count every lash. When he stumbles, I shock him with a little toy he swore he'd never let another man use on him. But I don't give a damn what he swore. He's mine now. The hidden cameras catch everything. Multiple angles. Crisp sound. The moment he called me mommy. The moment he begged me to forgive him for sins I never asked him to confess. The moment I made him bark for his kids' names. Then gagged him for every single one. 2 hours later, I untie him. He collapses like a marionette with cut strings. I hand him a towel and a glass of water. My voice returns to neutral, almost sweet. You'll remember this pain every time you open your mouth to speak on morality, Senator. He nods, unable to meet my eyes. They never can. You'll get a copy of the footage via burner account. I continue. One wrong move. One more lie. And the world will know what you really are. He tries to thank me. I laugh. Thank your wife. She booked the session. His eyes widen, but I don't give him time to spiral. I walk away, boots clicking like the last words in a courtroom. Back in my penthouse, I upload the footage. Encrypt it. Tag it. Crawford Matthew. Level 5 humiliation. One more piece in the puzzle. One more fallen titan. I take a long bath, surrounded by steam and silence, and sip wine like a goddess on her altar. The city twinkles beneath me. Somewhere, Crawford is probably praying. Or puking. But I sleep well. Because justice wears heels. And power? Power moans when I say so. They call me cruel. They call me evil. They call me queen. And I fuck like one. Chapter 2. The weakness behind the watch. They never just want the pain. They come asking for discipline, for domination, for a queen to break their pride. But what they really crave is absolution. They want to be fucked clean of their guilt. They want to confess their sins not to a priest, but to me, a woman who wraps chains tighter than wedding rings and makes truth spill faster than semen. I see it in their eyes. That flicker. That need. They need me to decide if they're worth saving or worth destroying. And I always choose the latter. The next morning starts like any other. Coffee. Black. No sugar. Silk robe draped around my shoulders, the color of spilled wine. The city sprawls beneath my penthouse like a whore who knows she's too good to settle down. I sip slow. I scroll through my messages. 3 new session requests. 1 marriage proposal. 2 death threats. Standard fare. But it's the 4th message that makes me pause. Name, Garrett Lennox. Title, CEO of Daxon International. Net worth, $7.4 billion. Request, I want to feel powerless. But I don't want to be humiliated. Just controlled. Note, no recordings. Must sign NDA. I snort. No recordings? Bitch, please. Men like Garrett are my favorite. The ones who think their money can buy immunity. That if they word their fantasy carefully enough, they'll somehow outmaneuver the game I've been playing since before they had their first divorce settlement. He'll be recorded. He'll be cataloged. And he'll be mine. 2 nights later, I meet him at the Astoria Suite, a 5-star hotel dripping in marble, overpriced arrogance, and concierge staff trained to smile through anything. I wear leather gloves and a floor-length black coat, nothing underneath but lingerie sharp enough to cut bone. My driver, Kane, waits in the car, engine purring like a threat. Garrett opens the door himself. Tall. Mid-40s. Trim beard. Rolex that screams I exploit overseas labor for a living. And that's the first thing I notice, his watch. Not the gold. Not the diamonds. The way his fingers stroke it, like it's an extension of his dick. He gestures inside. His voice is confident. Too confident. Please come in. I don't move. You don't tell me what to do. The look on his face? Priceless. Like someone just slapped the board of directors out of his mouth. Take off the watch. I say. What? The watch. Take it off. Now. There's hesitation, a flicker of resistance, and then compliance. Good. He sets it gently on the table like it's a relic. I walk past him, slow and measured, my heels whispering threats into the carpet. The room is elegant, sterile. Neutral tones. No soul. Just like every corporate merger he's ever orchestrated. You booked a queen, I say, removing my coat and letting it fall to the floor. So act like a subject. He stares at my body, lace curves, leather, dominance incarnate. His jaw tightens. You want to be controlled? I purr, stepping closer. Then let's make one thing very clear. In this room, I own you. Your breath. Your fucking heartbeat. If I say kneel, you hit the floor. If I say bark, you don't even think twice. His nostrils flare. He's aroused. Threatened. Curious. Understood. He nods. Yes, ma'am. Ma'am. Cute. But he'll learn. I tie his hands behind his back with silk rope laced in iron thread. Expensive. Deliberate. Every knot tells a story. One of control. One of seduction. I blindfold him next. Not just for the aesthetic, but because I want him to feel what every underpaid employee in his empire has felt. Unseen. Voiceless. Expendable. I guide him to the edge of the bed and make him kneel. The moment his knees hit the floor, the power shift hits him like a drug. His posture changes. His breath slows. His lips part. I trail my fingers down his chest, nails grazing his skin like threats whispered in foreign tongues. You ever fucked someone just to punish your own sins, Garrett? No, mistress. You will tonight. I slide the riding crop from my bag, black, firm, flexible. I let it trace his jaw. He flinches. Scared. No, mistress. Liar. I strike. Once. Not hard yet, but enough to make him gasp. Enough to make his spine straighten like a man testifying in court under oath. You're not here to be pleased, I murmur. You're here to be purged. The session is methodical. Sensual. Dark. I tie him in positions that strip him of every illusion of dominance. I use heat ice pressure. I whisper stock prices in his ear while I edge him until he begs like a man drowning in shame. I carve my initials into his inner thigh, not with a blade, but with a hot wax stamp. He howls. And I smile. At one point, he cries. Not from pain. Not even from humiliation. But from the unbearable relief of letting go. Men like Garrett spend their lives pretending to be gods. All it takes is 1 hour with me to remind them they're just sinners waiting for a sermon. When I finish with him, I untie the ropes. He's limp. Spent. Shaking. I remove the blindfold and whisper. You didn't die, Garrett. You just stopped lying to yourself for a few minutes. You should try it more often. He reaches for his watch like a baby reaching for a pacifier. I snatch it before he can touch it. Not yet. You'll get it back when you remember who the fuck you really are. His lips tremble. Who am I, mistress? I kneel beside him, hold the Rolex up to his face. You're a scared little boy who hides behind billion-dollar brands and backdoor deals. A man who's never been loved, only leveraged. A fraud wrapped in flesh. I drop the watch into his open palm like I'm handing him a burden he'll never escape. Now get dressed. Your mask is waiting. Outside, Kane leans against the car, smoke curling from his lips. He raises an eyebrow when he sees me. Another convert? I smirk. Another file. I open my phone and transfer the footage to my encrypted drive. Every angle captured in perfect clarity. His safe word. His tears. His moment of rebirth. Garrett Lennox, level 7 submission. I walk back inside the penthouse, peel off the leather, and step into the shower. The water scalds. Just how I like it. I stand there for 20 minutes, letting the steam wrap around me like armor. My reflection in the mirror doesn't blink. Doesn't break. I don't do this for the money. I don't do this for revenge. I do this because someone has to hold the mirror up to men like Garrett. And say, this is you. Naked. Powerless. Owned. Some people crown themselves with diamonds. Others with gold. But me? I crown myself with their fucking shame. Because I don't just dominate. I redefine the hierarchy. And baby, I don't play the game. I rig it. Chapter 3. The safe word is silence. There's a moment, right after they break, where everything goes still. Not just quiet. Still. Like the world stops breathing. Like time steps back and says, I'll give you a minute, queen. That's the moment I live for. When a man, one who thought his wealth, his title, his testosterone-soaked reputation made him untouchable, looks up at me with red eyes, shaking limbs, and realizes he's not in control of shit. Not his life. Not his secrets. Not his cock. Definitely not me. They always want to believe they're the ones steering the fantasy. That this is a transaction, not a transformation. They say things like, don't go too far, or just enough to feel it, like they've got guardrails on a ride I designed to derail them. But once they kneel, once the leash tightens and the room locks behind them, baby, there's no such thing as just enough. His name is Theo, tech startup darling, Stanford alum, IPO darling at 28, magazine covers, TED Talks, the kind of guy people write think pieces about titled, is he the next Musk? No, he's not. He's mine. His email was hesitant. He wrote like he was testing the water with his toe while trying to convince himself he didn't want to jump in all the way. I think I might be interested in a session. Maybe. I've never done this before. I read about you. Your reputation is impressive. I'd like to know more. I responded with one sentence. Wear black. Bring nothing. Speak only when spoken to. He replied with his hotel address. I arrive late on purpose. 15 minutes past the hour. That's enough time for him to feel ignored, unimportant. Two sensations men like him rarely face. It makes them squirm. Makes them ready. When I enter, he stands too quickly. He's tall. Too lean. Nerves are stamped across his face like acne scars. His hands twitch at his sides. He's trying not to look scared, but I can smell the panic underneath the cologne. You're late, he says. Wrong move. I tilt my head. Slowly. Let the silence stretch until it strangles the room. I didn't ask for your opinion, I say. He freezes. I take one slow step toward him, my heels slicing the silence like blades through silk. Take off your shirt. He hesitates. Another wrong move. I reach into my coat, pull out a pair of shears, and cut the shirt off him in four aggressive snips. Fabric falls to the floor. His chest is heaving. Fear. Excitement. Shame. It's delicious. I said nothing about you choosing how. I murmur in his ear. Next time, follow fucking instructions. I toss the ruined shirt at him. That's a $900 reminder to shut your mouth. He nods. I slap him. You nod again without permission, and I'll put you in the corner like the little bitch you are. The tears come fast after that. I tie him up differently. Not with rope. Not with cuffs. But with anticipation. I blindfold him. Make him strip the rest of the way himself. I make him describe what he thinks I'll do to him. He stammers through guesses, spanking a whip, maybe a leash. I smile at his small imagination. So limited. So ordinary. Instead, I walk him into the bathroom. Steam. Dim light. Black tiles. And a chair, cold metal, bolted to the floor. I sit him down, strap his ankles, wrists, and throat in place. One wrong movement, and he chokes. That's not accidental. That's architecture. Comfortable? I ask. He gulps. Why yes? I say nothing. For the next 30 minutes, I don't touch him. I pace. I let the silence eat him. I make sure he can hear the sound of my boots. My breathing. The small clicks and zips of tools he'll never see. I let dread curl around him like smoke. I wait until his thighs are trembling. Then I lean in. Safe word. Orchid. I smile. I love when they pick something delicate. So poetic. So tragically hopeful. I open a vial and drip cool oil onto his thighs. He gasps. I press a needle against his collarbone. Not to pierce, just to tease. He flinches. Then I whisper. The safe word is only useful if I give a fuck. His breath catches. You want mercy? I whisper. You better earn it. And that's when I start. The scene is designed to break him not with pain, but with exposure. I make him beg. Not for release, but for acknowledgement. He wants to be seen. Known. But I feed him anonymity. I never call him by name, only by what he is. Coward. Puppet. Empty suit. Every label strips another layer of his dignity. I write numbers on his chest with lipstick and force him to guess what they mean. He gets it wrong, over and over. Until finally, I whisper the truth. Those are the salaries of the women you paid less than their male counterparts. He sobs. But he still doesn't use the safe word. That's the thing about men like Theo. They crave consequence more than climax. The video is fucking exquisite. The high-def audio picks up every breath, every moan, every syllable of him begging to be human again. I don't post it, of course. I don't leak everything. Some clients get a pass. But I file it. Label it. Just in case. Aftercare is brief. I untie him. Hand him a warm towel and a bottle of water. He sits on the edge of the tub, limp, drained, eyes swollen from crying. You did well. I say softly. He blinks. I did. You made it through. He smiles, weak. Shaky. I help him dress. Slowly. One sock. One shoe. Button by button. He lets me. It's the only tenderness he's been given in months, maybe years. Before I leave, he stops me at the door. Can I see you again? I pause. Look him dead in the eye. That depends. On what? On whether or not you forget who you are the moment I walk away. Then I'm gone. That night, I sit on my balcony overlooking the skyline. City lights blink like secrets. I sip wine and watch my encrypted server back up Theo's footage. I don't do this to collect dirt. I don't do this to blackmail or destroy. I do it to remind them, every last one of them, that power is an illusion. They think they hold it. They think it's in the money, the name, the suit, the goddamn tech empire. But power? Power sits in a dark room, wearing red lipstick, holding a crop, staring into the souls of liars. Power is me. And tonight, another man learned to fear silence more than pain. Because the safe word was never orchid. The safe word was truth. Chapter 4, Queens Don't Apologize. Let me tell you something most people won't admit out loud. Power doesn't whisper. It doesn't beg. It doesn't fucking apologize. Power walks in, nails painted blood red, chin high, hips loose, gaze sharp enough to slice your childhood trauma in half, and it dares you to say something. That's what they feel the moment they walk into my presence. The shift. The gravitational pull. It's not about sex. Not entirely. It's about surrendering to something bigger than the illusion they've built around themselves. Because I don't just dominate men. I strip them. Peel them like fruit. Layer by layer. Ego, pride, delusion, and all those tiny lies they tell the world just to keep breathing. I expose what's underneath. And baby, what's underneath is never pretty. Tonight's session is different. It's not a CEO. Not a senator. Not a billionaire with an NDA fetish. It's someone far more dangerous. A man who thinks he's already been broken. His name is Julian. No last name. No business title. No Google trail I could dig through. Just a one-line message sent through encrypted channels. I'm not afraid of you. I want more than pain. I want war. War. I laughed when I read it. I shouldn't have. But arrogance is like perfume. It's everywhere in this line of work. Sometimes the scent is cheap and obvious. Other times, like with Julian, it's complicated. Alluring. Haunting. It sticks to you. Still, I said yes. The room I chose for him wasn't my usual dungeon. I rented a private theater, old, velvet-lined, forgotten. Red walls. A stage still stained with the ghosts of cabaret dancers and failed jazz solos. The kind of place that smells like broken dreams and cigar ash. Julian was already seated in the front row when I walked in. Alone. Legs spread. Arms resting on the back of the velvet chairs beside him. Like a fucking king without a throne. He didn't stand. He didn't flinch. He just looked at me like he already knew what I tasted like. No one does that to me. Not unless they're about to be ruined. I expected more, he said, voice deep, smooth, seasoned. Not cocky. Calculated. I walked past him slow. Measured. My boots echoing against the wooden floor like a countdown to hell. I stepped onto the stage. Looked down at him. You expected to matter, I replied. You don't. He smiled, but his eyes didn't. You're beautiful, he said. I raised an eyebrow. Don't flatter me, Julian. It won't endear you. I don't need your praise. I own your attention. I'm not here to be owned, he said. And that's when I realized. He didn't come to surrender. He came to test me. And fuck. I love a test. The session began without safe words. He refused to give one. Said they were for men who feared drowning. I told him drowning wasn't the worst thing I'd do to him. He smirked. I didn't tie him. I didn't gag him. I left his limbs free. Because freedom is more terrifying than chains. When you know the pain is coming, and you have every chance to run, but you stay. I used my voice first. Just my voice. I told him about the men who'd sat where he sat. Who'd whimpered, wept, cursed, and confessed their deepest sins while I carved forgiveness into their skin. I told him I'd made titans cry, had billionaires beg for a taste of my heel, had evangelists on their knees saying, "Mistress," louder than they ever said God. He listened. Silent. Unmoved. So I touched him. Not sexually. I placed my palm flat against his chest, right over the heart, and whispered, "Beat for me." And it did. Hard. But his eyes. Still blank. Still distant. This wasn't submission. This wasn't defiance. This was something else. I escalated. Dragged him on stage. Pushed him to his knees. Slapped his face. Not for pleasure, for pressure. "Fight me," I hissed. He looked up, chin bleeding, lips split open just enough to make Sin look like art. I already am. And then he stood. Unchained. Unapologetic. He pressed his forehead to mine. Didn't kiss. Didn't plead. Just existed, right there in my space. A heat between us that wasn't desire or hate, but something far more dangerous. Understanding. This wasn't a scene. This was a war between equals. A queen and a fallen king with nothing left to burn. We fought each other that night without touching. No ropes. No gags. No impact toys. Just eye contact and truth bombs. He told me about his past without words. It was in his posture. In the scars down his arms. The silence behind his sarcasm. I could feel the weight of his childhood. The betrayal. The loss. The years of pretending not to need what he craved most. To be seen. I whispered every truth he tried to hide. You want pain because it's easier than connection. You hate intimacy because it reminds you you're real. You crave being controlled because you've spent your life controlling chaos. Every line hit him like a whip. Every syllable tore flesh. But he didn't break. And neither did I. Hours passed. We didn't fuck. We didn't cry. We just unraveled. Piece by piece. Wound by wound. Until finally near dawn he said softly, "You don't scare me." And I said, "You're not supposed to be scared. You're supposed to be free." And for the first time his eyes, those dark, haunted eyes, shifted. Just a fraction. Just enough. The silence stretched. Then he whispered, "You win." But I didn't feel victorious. I felt raw. Exposed. And worse, seen. When I left him that night, I didn't record anything. Didn't file a video. Didn't encrypt shit. Some things aren't trophies. Some battles aren't won for show. Julian wasn't a client. He was a mirror. And baby, when a mirror looks back at you and doesn't flinch, that's when you realize the real war isn't in breaking others. It's in surviving yourself. Later, alone in my bed, I stared at the ceiling and whispered the one word I've never said in any of my sessions. Please. No one heard me. No one ever does. Because queens don't beg. We don't break. But sometimes, just sometimes, we remember what it felt like to bleed. Chapter 5, The Price of Permission. The whip never leaves marks on me. That's the part nobody sees. They assume because I wield the leash, the crop, the humiliation, because I command men who rule industries to crawl between my heels, that I'm untouchable. That I float above it all like some dark goddess who never bleeds, never bruises, never bends. But the truth? The truth is far more fucked than any of them would ever dare to imagine. I don't wear armor. I wear expectation. And every session, every scream, every sob, every orgasm weaponized into obedience, it builds the mask thicker. It feeds the legend, the name, the power. But underneath that, I'm just a woman who hasn't been touched without strategy in 5 years. It was a Thursday, late session, private residence in the Upper Hills. The kind of modern mansion that screams loneliness behind every minimalist surface. No personality, just furniture you're scared to sit on. Art that costs more than a house and means nothing. He was waiting for me on the balcony, naked except for a silver collar. Name, Carson Roth. Age, 39. Profession, defense contractor. Marital status, divorced. Twice. Kinks, degradation. Financial domination. Come control. Worship. But none of that mattered as much as what was in his eyes. Desperation. Not the kind that begged for a spanking. The kind that whispered, "I don't want to disappear tonight." He didn't speak when I entered. Didn't try to set the mood or control the room. He simply got on his knees. And waited. I said nothing. I circled him, slow, watching the way his back arched, the way his breath shortened when I got close, the way his cock twitched in anticipation not of pleasure, but of permission. They always think they're asking for pain, but it's never that simple. What they really want is to be acknowledged. And I make them earn it. "Crawl," I said. He did. Not gracefully. Not theatrically. But hunched and raw, like a dog thrown out in the rain. I led him into the living room. Large. Open. Pointless. He followed on hands and knees, palms sliding against polished stone that probably never felt dirt before. "Good boy," I whispered, brushing my heel under his chin. He whimpered. His cock drooled against the floor. "Do you trust me, Carson?" "Yes, mistress." "Do you believe I see you?" I hope you do." Wrong answer. I slapped him. Not with my hand, with words. I don't deal in hope. Hope is for the weak. You're not here to hope. You're here to obey. You're here to surrender. He shuddered. "Yes, mistress." "Better." I strapped him into a kneeling device shaped like a cross between a medieval prayer bench and a sex toy. His knees fit into the padded dips, his wrists chained behind his back, his head locked in place by a thick leather strap, so he couldn't look away. He was mine. I pulled out the long metal wand, taped with steel, programmed to pulse. Not a toy, a tool. He flinched when I circled him. Scared? Yes, mistress. I smiled. Good. That means you still feel. I didn't start the session with pain. That would have been too easy. No, Carson needed something else. He needed to confess. So I sat behind him, silent, and waited. After 15 minutes, he broke. I cheated on her. Both of them. I wasn't enough. I said nothing. The wand sat idle in my lap. The power was in my stillness. She cried when she left. She said I loved control more than I loved her. She was right. Still, I said nothing. She told me I'd die alone. I stood, walked in front of him, and crouched so our eyes met, barely an inch apart. And what did you say? He paused. I said, I hope so. I smiled. And that's when I turned the wand on. The next hour was symphony. Not noise music. I used sound, vibration, breath. I brought him to the edge over and over, but never let him finish. Every moan was a memory. Every gasp, a regret surfacing. I dragged his shame out of him like poison from a wound. And the whole time, I stared straight into his eyes. Made him look at me. At himself. Until finally, when I whispered, come, he shattered. Tears. Snot. Come. A holy trinity of release. He collapsed, shaking, chained in his own mess. I released him gently, wiped his face, cradled his head in my lap like a child who survived a storm. He didn't speak, just breathed. And for the first time in a long time, I felt something too. Not lust, not pride, not power, but sorrow, because I recognized that pain, the ache of being seen and still not feeling real. Later, when I stood to leave, he asked something no client ever has. Will you stay a little longer? Just sit with me? I froze. Not because I was offended, but because I didn't know how to say yes. I sat down. On the floor. Still in my boots. My corset pressing into my ribs. Hair perfect. Lipstick untouched. Mask intact. And I just sat. Minutes passed. Maybe hours. We didn't speak. We just existed. Two broken creatures who'd spent too long pretending control was comfort. And maybe, just for a moment, neither of us had to pretend. I left before dawn. Didn't charge extra. Didn't record. Didn't file. Because Carson didn't need a punishment. He didn't need a leak to learn his lesson. He needed permission. Permission to feel. To break. To admit he was fucking tired. And maybe. So did I. When I got home, I didn't shower. Didn't drink. I sat in front of the mirror. Still dressed. Still painted. Still her. The queen. The dom. The destroyer. But beneath it, a woman who couldn't remember the last time she came without control in her hands. Or love in her chest. They say power costs something. But nobody talks about the interest. The compound weight of being wanted, needed, obeyed, but never held. Never touched without purpose. And as I stared into my own eyes, I whispered the one word I swore I never would. Help! No one answered. Because queens don't cry. Not when they rule the world. Not when the leash is in their hands. But maybe. Maybe tomorrow, I'll let someone see the scars I hide underneath the throne. Just for a minute. Just until it hurts less. Chapter 6. The Danger of Being Touched. There's a rule I never break. Don't let them touch you. It's not about safety. I know how to end a session with a flick of my wrist and a blade tucked in my heel. It's not about professionalism either. That word died the moment I slapped a Supreme Court judge and made him call me mommy. No, the rule exists because touch is dangerous. Because even the strongest queen can shatter from something as simple as a hand that lingers too long. A breath that brushes too close. A man who doesn't just want to kneel, but wants to understand her. That's the danger. And his name was Eli. I wasn't supposed to take his session. He wasn't rich. He wasn't famous. He wasn't hiding secrets behind a mansion and a marriage license. He was quiet, blue collar, an electrician of all things. He emailed me through a secure channel, said he'd heard about me from someone anonymous, someone he wouldn't name. That should have been enough to turn me away. I'm careful. Always. I vet, I filter, I decide. But something about the tone of his message hit differently. No begging. No bravado. Just this one line. I don't want to be fixed. I just want someone to look at me like I'm not broken. I sat in silence after reading it. For 10 minutes. Then 15. and I said yes. He showed up early. Jeans, a flannel shirt, calloused hands, eyes like the part of a storm that comes after the destruction, when the wind stops but the world is still cracked. "Take off your shoes," I said when I opened the door. He did. "Don't speak unless I say." He nodded. I circled him, as I always do, assessing his body language, his posture, the rhythm of his breath. But Eli was still, centered, not afraid, not aroused, just present. And somehow, that made me uneasy. I started the session with ropes. Thick hemp. Tight knots. I bound his wrists, his ankles. Forced him to kneel, spread wide on the floor of my dungeon. The lighting was low, soft red bulbs casting shadows across his skin. I wanted him small. Wanted to see that flicker of resistance, that shift in power that always came when I stepped into my role. But it never came. Eli knelt like he was meditating. Eyes closed. Breath slow. Calm. It pissed me off. "You're not taking this seriously," I snapped. "I am, mistress," he said calmly. "I'm just okay being still." I slapped him. Not hard, enough to mark the air between us. He opened his eyes. And fucking smiled. "You're used to breaking people," he said. "But not everyone who kneels is broken." Something in me trembled. I ignored it. Escalated. Dragged out the impact toys. Leather, rubber, rawhide. I flogged him until his back was red. Until sweat beaded at his temple. But not a single complaint. No flinch. No begging. Just focused silence. "You think you're stronger than me?" I growled, grabbing his jaw. "No," he said calmly. "I just don't need to win." That's when I lost control. I slammed him down. Straddled him. Pressed my boot against his chest. His eyes never left mine. And that was the moment. That fucking moment. Where I felt something snap. Because it wasn't about pain. It wasn't about power. It was about me. And the terrifying realization that he wasn't afraid to see me. I stood, pacing. My chest was tight. I couldn't breathe. He just sat there waiting, like a goddamn storm that refused to move. "You don't know what I've done," I hissed. He shrugged. "You don't know what I've survived." I stared at him, and for the first time in years I felt exposed. Not naked. Not vulnerable in the cute, commercialized way. Fucking. Exposed. Like every layer I'd built, every calculated word, every sharpened edge, was suddenly transparent. He knelt before me not as a submissive, but as a mirror. And I saw myself. Tired. Angry. Lonely as hell. "Touch me," I whispered. The words escaped before I even meant to say them. He froze. "You said not to." "I know what I fucking said," I snapped. "Touch me." His hand rose slow, reverent. He brushed his fingers against my cheek, down my jaw, over my collarbone. No lust. No hunger. Just presence. And it wrecked me. I shuddered. My legs gave out. I fell into his lap like a wave collapsing on the shore. And for the first time in forever, I let someone hold me. Not as a fantasy. Not as a queen. But as a woman. We stayed like that for what felt like hours. No sex. No commands. Just skin on skin. Breath on breath. He whispered stories into my hair. About his little sister dying of cancer. About the father who drank himself into a coma. About how he used to cry in power lines during lightning storms just to feel something electric again. And I listened. For once, I didn't speak. Because I didn't have to. When he finally stood to leave, I walked him to the door. He kissed my hand. Not in some submissive gesture. In respect. "You're not as untouchable as you pretend to be," he said softly. "But that doesn't make you weak. It makes you human." I didn't respond. Couldn't. Because if I spoke, I knew my voice would break. After he left, I stood in the middle of the room, fully clothed, mascara smudged, chest aching. I didn't file his name. Didn't upload video. Didn't even charge him. Eli wasn't a client. He was a crack in the wall I've spent a decade building. And the fucked up part? I liked it. But cracks, no matter how small, grow. And the most dangerous thing a queen can ever feel is want. Chapter 7, The Throne Must Burn. I used to believe power was the destination. That if I broke enough men, conquered enough egos, owned enough moments of vulnerability, I'd finally be untouchable. That I could stack their moans and sobs like bricks and build a fortress around the softest parts of me. And for a while it worked. Until I met him. Not Eli. Not Julian. Not Carson. Not Garrett or Crawford or any of the countless souls I'd brought to their knees. Him. The one I never planned for. The one I never invited. The one who didn't kneel at all. Because he didn't need to. He just stood still and watched everything I'd built collapse around me. His name was Maddox. Ex-soldier. ex-husband, ex-fucking everything. The kind of man who didn't show up in expensive suits or with sugar-coated secrets. No tailored trauma, no curated shame, just truth. Raw, blunt, terrifying in its simplicity. He didn't contact me through the usual channels. He didn't request a session. He showed up at one of my underground shows. Uninvited. Front row. Arms crossed. Eyes locked. Everyone else in the audience was squirming. Awestruck. Aroused. Maddox sat still. Silent. Watching like he'd already seen the end of the performance, and was just waiting to see how long I could pretend it wasn't over. After the show, he found me in the dressing room. No knock. No apology. Just opened the door and stepped into my space like he was born there. Nice act, he said. I turned, fully nude, unbothered. It's not an act, I replied. It is, he said, voice calm. But you're brilliant at it. I should have thrown him out. Should have barked, snapped, slapped. Instead, I froze. Because deep down, I knew he was right. We didn't fuck that night. We talked. I sat in a silk robe, sipping whiskey. He leaned against the wall, drinking nothing, just watching me unravel without ever laying a hand on me. You like control because it keeps you safe, he said. But it also keeps you alone. I'm not alone, I replied. Name one person who knows your real name. I went silent, and he just nodded. Over the next few weeks, Maddox became a constant. Not in my sessions, not in my dungeon, in my life. He'd meet me for coffee, walk with me through abandoned city blocks at night, sit with me in silence while I stared at nothing. He never touched me, never asked to. He just existed beside me. No leash, no rules, no performance. And fuck, that scared me more than anything I'd ever done to another human being. One night, I asked him why he stayed. You don't need me, I said. He smirked. That's why I stay. Everyone else needs something. You're the only one brave enough to pretend you don't. Pretend? Yeah, because you do. You need to be seen, not worshipped. Seen. His words hit like a crop across the spine. That was the first night I cried in front of someone. Not in a scene. Not in control. Just me. I collapsed into him, sobbing so hard my chest felt like it might tear open. He held me. Quiet. Still. No words. No advice. He let me fall. And didn't try to catch me. Just stayed. Days turned into weeks. I stopped seeing clients. Turned down sessions. Ignored requests. Let my inbox fill with unread confessions and filthy desires. I wasn't the queen anymore. I was something else. Something softer. Something real. But the past never stays buried. One morning, I woke up to a leak. An anonymous upload. Footage from my encrypted archive. Dozens of sessions. Faces blurred, but voices raw. Begging. Crying. Moaning. Not just one video. All of them. Someone had breached me. Not just my files. Me. I went numb. Sat at my desk. Watched the clips loop. One after another. Crawford's collar. Garrett's tears. Theo's breaking point. Carson's trembling voice. My words echoing through it all like some dark priestess reciting judgment. The world would eat it up. But not because of the men. Because of me. Because I was the one who'd pulled the strings. Controlled the scene. Owned every second. And now the power was gone. Maddox came over that night. I didn't speak. He didn't ask. He just sat beside me while I stared at the screen. After a long silence, he finally said, "So what are you going to do?" I looked at him. Really looked. Burn it all. He didn't flinch. "Good," he said. I erased everything. Every backup. Every hidden drive. I even destroyed the throne. Took a sledgehammer to it. Leather. Wood. Steel. I smashed it until there was nothing left but dust and blood under my fingernails. It was over. I didn't stop being who I was. The queen lives in me still, but I stopped needing to prove it, stopped needing to conquer, because control without connection is just a prettier cage. And I'd been inside it too long. I'm not afraid of being seen anymore. Not afraid of softness, of being touched, of wanting. I still own my name, but now, I let someone else whisper it in the dark. And when I come now, it's not from breaking someone. It's from letting go. Power isn't in the whip, or the collar, or the leash. Power is in the woman who can destroy everything, and still choose to love herself. That's me now. Not untouchable. Not unbroken. Just real. Just alive. Just fucking free.